Tech Team Weekly. This show may contain mature language and themes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Tech Team Weekly with your friendly co-host. I'm Neil Studd, representing testing. Representing the world of product management, we've got Gwen Diagram. Hello, Gwen.
Hello. I don't know shit about product management, though.
Gwen, you know everything about everything.
Maybe. Product is definitely my weak spot, though.
We're all just muddling through it away. And chief muddler of all is our friend Sanj. Hi, Sanj. How you doing?
That's me. I'm still faking it till I'm making it.
Well, you've got to make it eventually, right?
Yeah, one day.
So here we are with our usual format. We're going to go through our stand-up updates of what we've been up to in the past week. We're going to go into our epic, which is all about complexity in software development. And then we're going to get through some news bites and we'll be out of here swiftly today. We're recording a day early, which means we've all got meetings and all sorts of stuff going on. But let's get into that with a stand-up.
The stand-up.
In my update, work is going really well. Everything's getting a lot more involved. I got very stuck in this week. Talking about complexity, I mean, it's perfect timing. I was dealing with every other task is, you know, some huge level of complexity. So the hard part is just wrapping your head around everything, but made some really solid progress today. This week. So it's going really good. It feels very rewarding and satisfying. It's been a long time since I've had this feeling. So yeah. All good. I want to have a little rant about masks. Like I walked down to like the local shop, a few days ago. It's like a 5-minute walk and I must have bumped into like 20 people on the way there and on the way back. And I was the only one wearing a mask and just feel like, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's that sensible. I'm doing an accidental no shave November. So it started off just being lazy. And then I was like, oh yeah, but wait, it's November. I've got an excuse. In terms of gaming, I'm playing this new game I was just telling Gwen about, called Genshin Impact, which is, pretty cool. So that'll be my weekend.
Nice. So I think you should keep the beard. I'm a very big fan of beards and I think it's beautiful. So yeah.
Oh, thank you.
So my update. So I've caught a bit of burnout, so I'm off for a little bit. So on Tuesday I was meant to be writing a document and I couldn't, and I just wanted to throw my machine out the fucking window. And I was meant to be in 24 hours worth of meetings this week, but I wanted to tell everyone to get fucked. So that's not very conductive to facilitating meetings. So I thought that, I should probably take some time off. I've just become really cynical. And it's not fair for other people. And yeah, so I just need to reset myself. What's really cool is the people team have been absolutely incredible. It's not very often I will go and speak to the people team. But yeah, they've just been incredible. So big ups to actually having a people team that do what you want them to. So that was ace. One of the big parts is the CTO's leaving. So there's a lot around that. A lot of like having to appear positive, but I just don't have the energy for that at the moment. So I thought I would remove myself from the situation. So outside of work, I drove to take my friend stargazing in the Yorkshire Dales, which was amazing. So we went for a walk by torchlight, and we saw some stars, which it was just ace. So I recommend doing it, a bit different. And on my downtime, I'm playing a lot of Witcher 3. So it's my happy place. So I think I'm level 94. I have played a lot of hours of Witcher. It just makes me very happy. And that's my update.
Cool. Well, glad to hear you're finding some happiness and good to hear that you're taking some time for yourself. That can be very hard to do. I've got a few days coming up where I'm taking off this coming week, partly because I've got family coming to stay, but partly because, yeah, also I just need a break. Mm-hmm. It's the hard thing about working for a company that has unlimited time off is you don't have that set allocation that you feel like you need to eat through. So finding time to actually go, no, I need a few days, is sometimes quite hard to do. So I'm looking forward to some time off this week. But it's been busy, busy, busy at Postman. We've been doing lots of interesting sort of QA team initiatives that we wouldn't normally get time for. We had two really big releases recently, and now we're taking some time back as a team. We're sort of repositioning ourselves. We've become more of like a centralized team rather than embedded within the squads. So we're trying to put together like a product offering so that people come to us when they need quality support, which is kind of interesting. And creating a load of new sort of training material and resources to go with that, particularly for onboarding. So I'm working on like a shift left initiative at the moment, helping encourage testers to get involved earlier in the process. So that's good fun. Following Sandy's recommendation, I watched all of Kevin Can F Himself this week, which was jolly good fun. Really, really enjoyed that. Really liked the way they did it. Looked like there's a really good contrast between the scenes that are like the faux sitcom and like the real world scenes, where it's just a completely different color palette. And it's really, really good fun. And it's only 8 episodes. It's quite a bingeable one. But my rant actually this week is around Star Trek Discovery, which is due to return this coming Friday. It's produced in America by, it was originally CBS and now it's Paramount Plus, which is their streaming service. Paramount Plus hasn't launched in the UK and Europe yet. So until now, they've licensed it out to Netflix and it's all been good. It's just been appearing on Netflix. Netflix have gone entirely silent about this new series that's due to come out. So there's really real shakiness about whether they're even going to show it. Because Paramount Plus is launching in Europe in the spring, I believe. I think it's actually coming to Sky. So it's going to be like the HBO and Sky partnership. I think there's going to be a Paramount Sky partnership. So it looks like Netflix are just keeping quiet, hoping no one notices that they've lost it. Paramount Plus can't shout about it because it's not out yet. So there may be a show that I get to watch this week. It's the horrible thing about like carving up streaming services. It does my head in. First world problems, I suppose.
I'm so happy to hear you watched Kevin Can F Himself and you liked it.
Yeah, I didn't get time to watch it twice like you did, but I also managed to squeeze in the first series of True Detective this week, which I'd never seen before. So more streaming hours than usual, actually, for me this week.
We've got to get you to watch it now, Gwen. I think you're in a good mindset to actually appreciate what this character goes through.
I did have a look at the trailers and it looks really cool, but I have no streaming services. I just watch YouTube. So, yeah, I'm very behind on all of the things. I did speak to my friend on when we went for the walk. I was like, "Do you have a spare Netflix?" And she does. So I might borrow her Netflix to watch some things. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Nice.
if you get any service and you want any recommendations, just come to us. I'm sure we can fill up your queue.
Thank you.
Social engineering.
Congrats to Kareem, who accepted his first role this week. He's a graduate from Makers Academy, which is this software bootcamp. He was pleased to hear that I also gave a shout out to my Makers mentee a couple of episodes ago. And my mentee got a job. I think he's got a job. He's got like a couple of offers. I think he has either made a decision or is on the fence or is going to soon. So congratulations to him as well. Lee Hawkins, as usual, thank you for all the shares. As an individual, you can easily and drastically reduce your carbon footprint by going vegan rather than waiting for government and big business and COP26 initiatives. That's so true. You know, Gwen's leading the way there, I think. Lee Rathbone says, hi, please don't lose the stand-up/huddle or whatever you choose to call it. I love it. It really allows the audience to get to know you folks, which in my opinion is mega important and sets you aside from the rest. Yeah, I think we're quite happy with it. I think it's a fun part of the show for us anyway.
Yeah.
Kev says he will check out I Can F Myself. yeah, Kev. Neil likes it as well. So, you know, check it out. I think it's pretty good. Someone who I'll keep anonymous and you'll understand why in a second. They say, just discovered your podcast recently and it's great. I work as a QA at a startup and while I really enjoy the work, I think I'm getting a bit tired. How do you guys know when it's time to move on from your current role? And have you ever tried to leverage leaving as a way to get a pay rise, asking for a friend?
So in regards to leverage, like leaving as a pay rise kind of thing, I'm always of the opinion if I have engineers that want to leave and they're asking for a pay rise to keep them to stay, that's going to get them to stay for maybe 6 months and then they're going to leave again. You should be paying people what they're worth in the first place. Like if you're not getting paid as much as you want, just fucking leave. There's no point dancing that dance because it never pays off in the end, I don't think. As for when to know when it's time to move off from your current role, like, are you still having fun? I think that's the main thing. When it stops being fun, I think it's time to go. As I said, I'm not having the most fun at the moment. However, I can see that there's a future and there's people that I want to continue working with and stuff like that. So, yeah, but, like, yeah, when you're just like, this has not been fun for a long time, I think then it's time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like this could be a subject for an epic 1 week about, yeah, when is the mm-hmm. right time?
Mm-hmm.
Like Gwen said, I think you need to follow your energy. And if there is a serious lack of energy, then it's certainly a good time to look. And just looking, you're not committing yourself to anything. So if you are feeling that you are deserving of a pay rise, then go to organizations and tell them what you are looking for. And you can't lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just see whether there's the opportunity there in the market. We talked about public disclosure of salaries in an earlier episode. And that's a really interesting thing that you can, if you're happy about being open with people and saying, you know, this has been my trajectory so far. It's flatline for the last 4 or 5 years. I want it to go up. It's good to be able to go to people and explain that.
So as well, the easiest way to get a pay rise is to move jobs, move roles or move jobs entirely. And I was on 27 and a half at one place, and I wasn't going to get more soon. And I moved roles and I was on 38. And I wouldn't have been able to get that amount from that role. So if you want a large pay rise, you will have to move.
Mm. I think this is definitely prime territory for an epic 1 week.
I'd love to talk about this.
Yeah. Next up, a short thing to talk about, which God knows when that will be. But yeah, we'll throw that one into the mix.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It is just crazy that companies will spend so much to bring in new people, but not spend anywhere near that to keep the old mm-hmm. people, you know. Doesn't make mm-hmm. sense, does it? It's counterintuitive, right?
Totally.
Before we move on, I want to make a public apology to Gwen Diagram, because just before the show, I made an assumption, because I was slacking and I hadn't filled in my notes on the spreadsheet. I made an assumption, because Neil is usually the responsible one. I thank Neil, and it was actually Gwen who did my work for me. So thank you,
no
Gwen.
No problem.
Thanks for not mentioning, Sanj, that the reason I didn't do it was because I was watching Home Sweet Home Alone, the new Home Alone reboot on Disney+, which is awful and a complete waste of an hour.
Why would they remake it? Home Alone.
They've got the money and they can. There's so much product placement in there. It probably paid for itself and some people had a good time. But
they're British. I'm so offended that they're British. It's horrible. Shall we move on to podcast-driven development?
Yes, brilliant.
All right. So there's not too much different here. The listen and play graphs, they're just going up steadily. We've had around 120 views or listens in the past week, which is stable. So that's good. Nothing disastrous, nothing too big to shout about. It's just chugging along. So that's good.
Still looking much healthier than the Peloton stock price. I think we're doing something right.
We can be consultants for them. They could hire us.
That would be fun.
They could afford it.
This week's epic
is the topic of increasingly complex tech stacks following a recent think piece on InfoWorld titled "Complexity is Killing Software Developers." The growth of containerized microservices gives us greater control over the individual parts of our systems, but it can make it more of a challenge to visualize the application as a whole. In essence, there's a danger that we're actually building micro silos where full stack expertise is harder to come by. The same is true when it comes to external packages that we bundle with our code. Gone are the days when our development teams wrote every line of code themselves. And while there are certainly time savings of reusing pre-built code, and there are quality benefits from pulling in libraries which have themselves already been well tested, we just end up with more black boxes to support. To me, it's a bit like food. There's a growing desire to know exactly what we're putting in our mouths and where it comes from, but we don't seem to have reached that point with our software yet.
What's really interesting is we've had a couple of incidents at work, and we don't usually have incidents. It's been quite rare. And I think either 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 have been from third party software. So we upgrade things. Usually all our incidents are from third party software, and it's frustrating trying to find the problem as well, I think.
Yeah, certainly historically I've seen very similar. I mean, sort of popular packages are now a lot more stable than they used to, but the number of days when you put in a random library to reformat dates, and that's the thing that causes something to go wrong because someone pushes a tiny update to a poorly supported library. You do really have to be careful of including external packages, but then again, it does save time, and we don't need to keep reinventing the wheel on every little project. If we use something like React. That's much better than, you know, building your own UI framework from scratch, because, you know, you've already got test automation suites that can plug into it, and, you know, you don't need to worry about crafting everything from scratch.
I mean, one of the big things that this article, which is very good, called out was microservices, this trend, right? And this trend of like abstracting things further and further away from, you know, the source where they're being used. Like, is this, I mean, is this just like the moment? That's the problem right now. That's the kind of trend. Or is this a bigger issue?
So we had when I first started at Glean, we had a bit of an argument, which is great in software development, because the DevOps human, Mark and I, were like, why aren't we using microservices? We should be like using microservices. And the architect was like, I don't think we need to. And so what we did is he found this talk by, oh my God, I can't remember the name, Martin Fowler, and must have been James someone, I can't remember, but talking about how microservices aren't always the answer, and the way that he argued it with this talk, and then we had a discussion afterwards, was so beautiful, and we came to the decision that, no, we probably don't need microservices. But, you know, you are inclined to go to the shiny immediately, aren't you? Like, microservices are shiny, and that gives like our DevOps human more things to play with as well, and you always want more things to play with.
They certainly pair really nicely with cloud scalability. Certainly the scale of some of the sites that I work with lately, like Postman and Money Supermarket, sometimes you just need to spin up a new instance of something, and, you know, it's one particular node, you want four instances of that where you only had one before, so the ability to push bits of your application up and not others is really useful. But it does lead to the situation where, you have knowledge silos as well. So our individual microservices are all really well tested. We've got things like contract tests in place so that we know that there are only certain ways in which you can call and consume our service. But we still don't necessarily know which parts of our product or other people's products are using them. And I was thinking back, I was trying to think, when was the last time I worked with an application where I personally understood the entire, everything in the stack top to bottom? And it's probably like 5 or 6 years ago, and that was because I was working on a desktop application where it is one single unit. But these days, I mean, you rely so much on, I mean, having expertise is not a bad thing, but creating silos is a real concern.
So microservices aren't always implemented like in the best way either. So with fads like this, people can jump on the bandwagon without properly understanding it. I worked somewhere where we had a set of microservices, but we had to deploy them all at the same time, which they took half a day to deploy because the deployment pipeline was like rubbish, which was really hilarious. But not good. Like, because it's so complex, like, and not everyone understands like how to use these things, but they really want to get involved in like the next coolest thing. It was a bit sad.
Yeah, and it comes back to the problem of dependencies. Yeah, if one of your microservices wants to push use a new version of a library that another microservice is still relying on an older version, pushing all your microservices together avoids that problem. It does take the word micro out of it somewhat.
Totally.
Is it unavoidable? I mean, the things that we're doing these days, you know, in web apps and like in software development, testing, you know, QA in general, you know, everything's getting more and more complicated, right? You know, everything's ramping up and we're trying to do so much more and we're trying to make it simple and efficient and effective. And that brings complexity with itself.
Yeah, it's similar to the project management triangle where you've got features, quality and time. And theoretically, you could pick any two of those and the third one will suffer. If you want to deliver a set load of features on time, then quality is going to have to suffer. If you want to build... The alternative is deliver a quality product on time, then you don't have the features. So, you know, if you can consume someone else's library and, you know, suddenly, you know, you're using someone else's, I don't know, video plugin rather than crafting your own, you've saved time and still got the features. I think we are just generally trying to do more complex things than we used to.
So I think you need to be really skilled to write simple software as well. Simple software is like proper, like, more experienced developer kind of territory. And if there aren't really experienced developers, like on a team or working, like at an organization, the software will end up more complex.
Just one data point from me. Certainly, I know that during sort of the development lifecycle, traditionally, going back over the last decade or so, when I've been pairing with developers, you've gone through a phase where you've written something that works, and then you go back and refactor it and make the code, you know, elegant and beautiful and reusable and tight. That last refactor part seems to be dropping by the wayside a lot from what I'm seeing. We get something that works, and then we move on to build the next thing that works, when actually, and that's just accruing tech debt again, and it makes it harder to get those applications simpler again because you've just got spaghetti code everywhere.
That's a way to make your developers really sad as well. That's one of the most common things that you hear from developers with, like, dissatisfaction around their roles. Like, they have to, it becomes a feature factory where they don't get to go back and, like, either measure what they've built or refactor what they've built. And they feel like there's loads of half finished stuff everywhere. Yeah, so to keep your developers happy, definitely give them time to improve on what's been built before.
But it's inevitable, right? No matter what you do, how amazing you are, how right a decision you make, 6 months from now, it'll be the wrong decision, right? You'll need to refactor regardless.
Totally. Right. You should always look back at your own code and see it as shit, because that means you've grown. Yeah. If you don't, that means that, you know, you probably haven't grown that much.
And that's where microservices can save us as well, because if you're only rebuilding a known part of the system with known inputs, known outputs, you could completely tug that out and replace it with a prettier version, should that be something you choose to do.
I think the experience part is a really big factor in this, because something like half of the engineering workforce has less than 4 years of experience now, right? Because there's such a factory churning out new devs now, right? We need so much, there's so much demand, right? And we're trying to meet that supply. And also, we're working with cool, sexy new tech, which is like a few years old. You know, who could, you know, to be a senior in like React, you have like 4 years experience, you know, it's not a lot, right? And you can't draw on that much pain and struggle to make the correct decisions now, can you?
That's true. That's true. That is a problem with the newer tech. Like, no one's experienced in it.
And we do rely on people. I love the people who I work with who've been doing it for like, you know, 10, 20 years, you know, because they're great. They bring so much like perspective and wisdom to the decision-making process, right?
Yeah, I think the world is getting more complex. These complexity problems are not going anywhere. The article asked whether it's killing software development. I think software development is going to have to adapt, and that includes all disciplines, so including testers. You know, there are plus and minuses of complex systems or reusing packages, but we just have to deal with it, aren't we?
And I think, you know, some people have never worked in a good environment, you know, and I you know, if you haven't, trust me, they're out there. There's lots of great engineering cultures where they do put in the time to refactor stuff, and, you know, the code is good, you know, despite how complex it has to be, right?
Completely.
News bites.
So I think Bill Gates listens to the show, because a couple of weeks ago, Gwen said she would, when we were discussing Facebook, which is now Meta, going into the metaverse, she said she would like it if Microsoft, you know, made entered the metaverse, made a VR thing instead. And they've announced they are actually going to enter the whole metaverse with their HoloLens product. So yeah, you got your wish. Thanks, Bill. We appreciate it.
HoloLens is still only available to developers, isn't it? And it's over £3,000.
Oh, really? Is it? I thought it was already available.
Is it available? I've not had a look. Not in a while, because HoloLens is. So I really like the AR aspect over the VR aspect. I'm going to have a look. I don't think I'll be buying one. I would love to buy one. I might be buying one.
Can't resist.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'd like to talk about this Swedish school app. So Christian Landgren is a father in Sweden who was struggling to use the City of Stockholm's official school system, which is called Skol Platform. Poor UX meant small tasks were really difficult to complete, such as reporting your child sick. So Skol Platform has cost more than 1 billion Swedish krona, and it has an average 1.2 star rating on Android, and it was built by the government and it's been labeled an IT disaster. So Landrigan was sick of attempting to use this app, so he asked the city officials if he could see the API documents, but he ended up reverse engineering the platform and creating an API on top of it because he didn't get a reply. So Sweden's data regulator, which has a word that I am not going to attempt to pronounce, found serious flaws in this platform, which exposed the data of hundreds of thousands of parents, children, and teachers. So Landgren teamed up with two other parents and created an open source version of Skoll platform and published it on GitHub. And in response, the city of Stockholm attempted to shut down the app. They tweaked their APIs to attempt to stop the open source app operating, and they also called the cops. But the police determined that the open source app didn't pose a threat to users, which resulted in the city changing its position on Öppna Skoll platform, which is open school platform. So if you're a parent in Stockholm, you can download Öppna Skoll platform and you can actually contribute as well. There's currently 40 odd developers contributing to the open source product. Landgren has seen interest from other cities in Sweden as well, such as Gothenburg. And as a closing remark, he states that officials should make their APIs open so citizens can build technology that works for them. If you build the API, that apps will come. I just thought that was a really interesting story because the city called the bloody cops on him for building a open source app. Wild. Yeah.
Building a better app that was no less secure than the one they'd already built themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. Like using their APIs.
For a billion krona less?
Yes. Yes.
It's bizarre because the API endpoints were publicly available. They were all open, right? So this open source app, I guess they just figure this out, then they reverse engineer it and they make a better app, right? Yeah, so why is this API open?
Yeah, you can't build in the open and then tell people they can't consume it. That's madness.
Well,
I would say I'd buy Christian a drink, but I know how expensive drinks are in Sweden. So maybe wait on that.
I assume that's why the data regulator found serious flaws in the platform. If Landgren could just do this, what else could be seen? It's absolutely mad. But yeah, nice work.
What is it about publicly funded technology projects? They're always terrible.
They are very large. They don't often use internal people because then they have other people to blame. So often they will have multiple consultancies working on it. If you've ever looked at Spine, the NHS thing, have you heard of Spine, like the original Spine? No. Oh my God, this story is fucking amazing. So Spine had loads and loads of different consultancies working on it. Massive thing. Absolute failure, cost the NHS a lot of money. So some developers split off and started building Spine 2. Spine 2 is what's used now. I think I'll have to find data on this to make sure that I'm not spinning bullshit. I think there's some talks around on Spine 2 and the story about Spine. It's a very beautiful story about how people reduce complexity and built something that actually worked without loads of consultancies. But I think that's one of the core reasons why there is a failure around it.
There are so many bits of the UK Gov site that, again, these are little small projects that I would just like to rip out and rebuild from scratch or do my own thing like they did in Sweden. The system they have for what they used to call childcare vouchers, which is like for paying for nursery places, it's ridiculous. They used to give you literal voucher codes, like an Amazon voucher code. They now have this weird portal you have to log into with 20 security steps, where you have to upload, literally pay some money into an account that takes a couple of days to appear, and then you pay your childcare provider out of that account again. So they're just the amount of layers of complexity they've added. The security steps are occasionally baffling. You have to reconfirm that every 3 months to basically check you're still alive. It's very odd. I want to do a standalone video on that one day because that's crazy.
I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, I'll put something together because if I could do it in a way that doesn't expose all my details, it's madness. Speaking of madness, Elon Musk has done some weird things in the past, but this is one of his strangest. Faced with criticism of his large Tesla stock holdings, which effectively allow him a legal loophole to avoid tax, he was mulling over selling 10% of his stock, which is worth billions, and there'd be a large tax bill to come with it. Elon being Elon, he decided to base his decision on a Twitter poll, asking the internet whether or not he should sell 10% of his stock. And after 3.5 million votes, 57.9% of those surveyed said that he should sell his stock, which is basically a landslide if you compare it to Brexit. Musk completed the sale of $5 billion of shares at the end of last week, knocking 7% off the Tesla share price in the process, although its continued growth means that it should soon reverse that loss. And Elon himself is not going anywhere. Despite selling several million shares, he still owns 166 million more. He was perhaps hoping that this move would get him out of hot water, but in developing news, his brother, Kimball Musk, conveniently sold just over $100 million of shares just before Elon posted his Twitter poll, therefore protecting himself against the volatility that followed. Rich people are the worst sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a thin line
playing the system.
There's a thin line between eccentric and fraud. I won't say on air which side I think this is, but yeah.
You're not allowed to.
He could have waited until after the tweet, right?
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that, are you? I don't think you are. Quite bad.
That sounds like insider trading.
It really does.
I'm sure that the necessary people have done the checks to make sure it isn't, but
I'm sure they haven't.
The Wash Up.
And that's all, folks. Thank you very much for joining us. We've had a great time. We hope you have as well. Please remember to like, subscribe, tell a friend, and see you next week.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
Tech Team Weekly.